good or we don't have the talent, but we know that we have the confidence in the guys to do it. So it's going to be a fun season, proving people wrong again.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue Studios, this is the 12th Man Roundtable.
Every day we're spotting guys in different places to make sure that they get their opportunities to show what they can do so we can keep it as competitive as possible.
Brought to you by Carpet Liquidators, locally owned and operated since 1988 with 6 Western Washington locations. The 12th Man Roundtable with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, KJR beat reporter Curtis Crabtree, and KJR's Hugh Millen on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Pepper needs new shorts.
Oh, yes. It's our favorite time of the week to sit down and chat with the Titans of football.
Well, it's one of mine.
Yeah, probably the third.
Well, I have, there's like two or three of them where I basically get to talk like this right at the very beginning, and then I just sit here and listen.
Hey, that one? Soak it up.
I
be
do.
A sponge.
You're welcome. To
the 12th Man Roundtable is brought to you by Carpet Liquidators Shop. Carpet Liquidators, their warehouses are full of name brand carpet and floor, including Mohawk Smart Stand Silk. That's hard. That's really hard. The most durable and easiest to clean carpet on the planet. All in stock and ready for immediate installation. Carpet Liquidators, locally owned and operated since 1988 with 6 Western Washington locations. And with that, we welcome in Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider from the News Tribune.
Morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Hi.
Curtis Crabtree, our Seahawks reporter here at KJR.
What's up, y'all?
And Hugh Millen, the quarterback, the analyst.
Hi, boys.
Hi, Hugh. Good to see you, man. All right. We start with the Ocho. We go quickly around the table. I assign you topics of discussion, and I'm going to start with our first item right off the bat with Hugh. I've already talked about this with Greg this morning, so I'll ask you. It's been kind of a head-scratching week around here trying to figure out what exactly happened Monday night. What were those comments? What did they mean? Why is Tom Johnson not on this team anymore? A lot of head-scratching things this week. What are you still scratching your head over for Monday night?
Third quarter, 1 yard. I think you go the first half, you go 5 straight series on punts to start the game. On the last drive of the second quarter, you do get a field goal, and then you come out. And as I said, just the 1 yard. And it just looked like a team that was just coming off their first mini-camp practice. And didn't protect well. Tried to throw short in the first drive. Then they come back in the second drive, and it just was like kind of flyers up. Let's just heave it down the field. There was no
synchronicity.
Yeah, I was going to go. Yeah, police. Thank you.
I don't remember the police single cohesion.
Right? Yeah. They had an album. Right? Come on, dude.
I got it.
I'm with you, Hugh.
Yeah, late 70s rock albums.
Oh, yeah,
let's go. But. I just thought it was a mess, and I think the pass protection, you know, just the fact that they look, you know, not feeble in a physical sense, but just, you know, just overwhelmed in terms of just their capacity to handle blitzes. And it results in just gumming down the offense in a way that I guess you asked me the question. That's what would still be drawing my ire.
Slickhawk needs to show you the video he showed us during the last break.
On
Jermaine Effetti. I'm sure Hugh's seen it.
I'm sure he's.
We'll deal with that in the next segment. Curtis, who's the starting running back on this team, and how many carries is he going to get this weekend against the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, starting running back will still be Chris Carson. How many carries he's got, I don't know. I mean, at some point, they need to do what they say they want to do, which is supposedly to run the football. They spent the entire offseason telling us that getting back to running the football was of paramount importance to us. Then they run it 14 times against Denver. Ask about why there was a lack of running game. Pete Carroll says, well, 14 carries wasn't good enough. So last week, they run it 19 times, with 3 of those coming on the first 3 plays of the game. So they had 16 carries on their final 59 plays of the game. In Chicago.
Yeah.
And their starting running back doesn't touch it for the final 41 minutes of the game. Like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at some point, you call the plays. You pick the plays you want to run. They need to pick more running plays. If they want to be a running team, like they say they do, then they need to walk the walk.
And I don't even care what they tell us they're going to do. They can lie to us about that. It's that the moves you made in the offseason all suggested
sure.
this is what
drafting
you're trying
a first
to
round running back, adding two blocking tight ends, DJ Fluker. Yeah, all of that speaks to wanting to run the football more, and they're just not doing it. And, I mean, to his credit, I guess, Pete Carroll said yesterday it was his impatience that got away from it. But it's not like the running game has been ineffective either. Like, they're getting yards on the ground when they do it. And given the fact that they're not doing that much in the passing game right now, it might be wise to do it a little more.
Yeah, the offense seems to be drawing everyone's ire right now, Greg. So, Russell, having a slow adjustment to a new offense, having a slow adjustment to Brian Schottenheimer. He doesn't look like the same Russell right now. Why?
Well, the one reason is the lack of a running game.
Okay.
It's got the offense out of balance. And what it really does is make the defenses just, they don't have to honor the run, so they can come after Wilson and attack the weakest part of the team, which is pass protection. That's, I think, as big a reason as any. He doesn't. We talked about 7 o'clock. He doesn't have a large pocket. In Chicago, he didn't have any room to throw when he did have time. It's one thing to have time. During that time, how much space do you have to operate, to escape if you have to, step up in the pocket to throw? In Chicago, he didn't. Jermaine Ifedi was talking about that yesterday. We have to provide a bigger pocket for him. There are a multitude of factors I think would solve itself if they run the ball. And I'm not even talking about run the ball effectively. I'm talking about run the ball so defenses play you, honestly. So far in two games and most of 2017, defenses do not have to read run keys, do not have to play the run. They just come after the quarterback. And that's a step or two of a head start that this offensive line, and Jermaine Ifedi in particular on the edge, cannot afford.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Justin Britt. What does he do if he can't play to this offense? And I guess I'll start, Greg, with, is he going to play for this offense this week?
Day-to-day, Bruce shoulder, Pete Carroll said yesterday. The plan, Carroll said, was Ethan Posick, the left guard who played LSU center, to be the center. But Posick's in a walking boot with an ankle injury, missed practice yesterday, which would mean it would be the third option, Joey Hunt, who's on the team, to be the backup center. I don't think it sounds like, I don't think, if that makes sense, that Justin Britt's going to play on Sunday. They hope that Posick will be back. If he can't be back, you could move J.R. Sweezy to left guard now because D.J. Fluker is back to play right guard and Joey Hunt would be the center, all of which is not optimal to for an offense that's already struggling both in the run and in pass protection.
Hey, if Joey Hunt's not going to step in as backup center for your injured center, then what's the point of even having him on the roster?
Well, you have to have a backup center just in the case of Posick, if he can't move over and has to play guard because Fluker's hurt.
Okay.
So, yes, there's roster dynamics with swing players who can play multiple positions on the offensive line.
Curtis, who's starting at linebacker for the Seahawks on Sunday against Dallas?
I would assume it will be Bobby Wagner and Michael Kendricks. At this point in time, I think there's a chance KJ Wright will be healthy enough to play, but with him not practicing yesterday, it's probably still a little bit of a long shot. He hasn't practiced at this point in 3 weeks, given the surgery he had the final week of the preseason. Might be a little bit much to ask on a day or two of practice to get back. And if he's not back today, it's probably ruled out that he would play this weekend, just because the Friday practice isn't significant enough to get there. So that would be my assumption.
Another great pass rusher that they'll face on Sunday, Hugh and DeMarcus Lawrence. Mack and Miller weren't responsible for all 12 sacks, though, in those first two games. So kind of playing off what you pointed out a little bit earlier, the pass rush right now, how do you fix this thing at this point?
Well, I think, first of all, most of the sacks were coming off of failure to pick up the blitz. So I think that they just need to spend more time in walkthrough and just walk through their assignments. Now, whether they get beat physically is going to be another matter, but I think that you see a little bit of a blueprint on Russell Wilson, that the sacks that they didn't get from pressure, there's kind of a slow squeeze that we talked about on Monday where the ends don't get too far up the field to allow the B gap escape, and that's the gap between the guard and the tackle. What they're inducing Russell to do is if they just push the pocket in front of him, if he wants to escape, he's got to go out the C gap, which is outside the tackle. Well, the ends are staying in a position, to use a term that is most often associated with run defense, they're two gapping instead of one gapping. Instead of just trying to take a single gap, they're kind of standing up and they're in a position where they're walking guys back to Russell, but they're in a position that if Russell wants to bail, particularly to his right, and retreat outside the tackle, that left end is in a position to drop him. So we haven't seen that elusiveness from him, but I think in part because we've seen some different strategies to blitz him and to rush him.
Dallas doesn't just feature a great pass rusher. Ezekiel Elliott will be on the field on Sunday. They've got a terrific offensive line, Greg. Dak Prescott's running more this year. Let's tie in the Tom Johnson fiasco with the question, are the Seahawks defensively ready to stop a running attack like this?
Well, we'll find out. They did well in Chicago. I think it was 87 yards rushing for the Bears, and a lot of that was at the end of the game when they were trying to run out the clock. And they were fairly effective for three quarters in Denver until Royce Freeman ran them over with the game on the line to salt away that victory. Johnson's a factor. They got him to stop the run for sure. Now it's going to be Shamar Stephen and Nazir Jones and Jerron Reed still starting there. The unproven is the best word you can say about the run defense right now. And you're right about Dak Prescott. He's running more. He ran seven times, career-high 45 yards last week, and the Giants win over the Giants. They've got statistics in Dallas that say they're 5-0 when he gets seven carries and 7-1 when he gets at least five, and the owner has said he wants to run more. That is one way this team is different than when the Seahawks faced him down in Dallas on Christmas Eve. Another is Ezekiel Elliott was only on the team for 1 week back from suspension last December 24th. He's on the field fully ingrained in the offense this time. And Pete Carroll said that the Cowboys are doing a lot more offensively. They're more creative. They're more balanced. They're harder to defend than they were December 24th. Not the best time for a defense that's scrambling around right now. Ken Norton, I talked to him yesterday. He's doing a lot differently than he signed up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you think about January, what he had on defense, Richard Sherman was still here. Cam Chancellor was still a prospect to play. Michael Bennett was still on the team. Cliff Averill was still a chance to come back to play. Bye-bye. Those are all gone. He hasn't blitzed as much Norton as he did in the preseason because he can't afford to with who's in the secondary, who's been playing linebacker. They played a very simplified defense. Norton didn't want to admit that yesterday, but Pete Carroll and the players said they played a much simpler defense in Chicago because they had to because of the linebackers. That alone will change when Bobby Wagner comes back this week.
We're going to expand on all of these topics coming up for the rest of the hour. But my final item at the Ocho, Hugh, as a man that has been dying for a big physical receiver on this team with separation.
Yeah.
When you're watching the Huskies this weekend, are you going to picture N'Keal Harry in a Seahawk uniform?
Well, yeah, and I tell you, that might be the single greatest thing I'm looking forward to this Saturday.
Is that right?
I mean, maybe. I mean, you know, there's other things, but no, I think that of all the players that are going to play in that game, the guy that I would project to make the most in any single year financially, and it could be by that time, it could be 20. You know, what do you think, guys? An elite receiver could be making $25 million in 5 years. No, this guy's a bona fide thoroughbred in every regard, and it'll be fun to watch. Hopefully the Huskies will corral him, but they'll have a plan for him, but he's special.
Yeah, looked pretty good in the Seahawks.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
That'd be nice.
That'd be
fun.
You know, it's like going to watch Julio Jones when he was in college.
Yeah.
You know, take a mental snapshot of what this guy's going to be.
I said Andre Johnson, and
– yeah.
Slickhawk in there just started like drooling. There's like a puddle of drool at his desk over that thought.
Well, if we're going to suck, let's just get that guy.
All right, coming back with more of the 12-man roundtable brought to you by Carpet Liquidators, and we're going to let our insiders expand on these topics and others. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Welcome back in. It's the 12th man roundtable here at Sports Radio 950 KJR. Chuck and Buck in the mornings. We have all the usual suspects assembled. Greg Bell of the News Tribune, Curtis Crabtree, our Seahawks reporter here at KJR, and Hugh Millen as well. And it's been kind of a strange week. I mean, we've been trying to, preview on a Monday, watch that game on Monday night, lose that game and start 0-2. And all of us at the exact same time, I'm sure, are questioning, why isn't Chris Carson getting the ball more often as we're watching the second half unfold? And then to find out the answer was he looked gassed. And then to find out the answer was, no, they didn't really look gassed. It was more of a communication issue. Really strange topic. I think we got to start there, Hugh, because you said on Tuesday, we can't accept that as an answer, that he was gassed. Do you accept that it was a communication issue? Because I think that sounds worse.
Well, my only point was, if I'm Chris Carson, there's just no way that he was too gassed to carry the football. And if I'm Chris Carson, I don't want the head coach coming out and saying I'm too gassed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whether or not he wanted to see more of Rashad Penny or what have you, at least Pete Carroll kind of came clean midday mm-hmm. on that day. But it's a little bit of a cluster F when you're losing, you're 0-2, and things like this. It just seems like, you know, like you're just kind of fiddling around in the dark, you know, stepping on rakes, you know. So
Carson played 19 plays, 19, and two were on special teams. So that reasoning never made sense.
Mm-hmm.
From the minute he said it after the game, it never resonated.
So the answer is, I just like Penny more than Carson right now. I mean, that has to be the answer.
Not necessarily.
If the answer, Greg, is, no, we had a communication issue, how can you miscommunicate about the availability of your running back?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
they didn't. Some of it could be this, that Pete Carroll is covering for his new offensive coordinator who's not calling enough runs. That's one. Two, they are not predisposed to run the ball anyway. Now, they brought in Mike Solari and Brian Schottenheimer to do that, but in the last 3 years, they are predisposed to let Russell Wilson try to win games by himself. Now he can't do it because Doug Baldwin's not on the field. The offensive line's not giving him a pocket to escape hatch. But the predisposition of Pete Carroll and the guys he's played and hired is to run the ball, or to pass the ball, and to let Russell Wilson win the game by himself. I suspect that we still don't know the truth, and that I know that I was standing there with my mouth agape and couldn't even ask a follow-up question at Soldier Field on Monday night when he said special teams and gassed. And Chris Carson was the dutiful soldier yesterday before practice and saying, I just do what the coach says, but I wasn't tired. He made it clear that he wasn't tired. I think he's covering a little bit for the offensive coordinator, to be honest with you, in his second game. And Schottenheimer has yet to find the right formula of when he wants to mix in the runs and the balancing versus Russell Wilson's trying to win the game by himself.
But aren't we?
From the 8-11 mark of the second quarter until the 14-15 mark of the fourth quarter without running a single run
play. That's right. And we had a running total in the press box. We were counting. It was like a New Year's Eve clock at Times Square. We were counting down the minutes as it was happening, the last running play. And when they handed it to Penny with 14 minutes left in the game, I don't usually do this, but as a knee-jerk reaction, I shouted out, holy four-letter word. I shouted across the locker room because I was so shocked that they actually ran the ball, because I kept a running tally that kept going. Carson didn't even factor in any of that. And the only drive of the game, they looked like an NFL offense before that garbage time one at the end. When they went no huddle and scored the touchdown with Tyler Lockett, it was Penny on the field. And during that time, I put my binoculars on the sidelines to look at Chris Carson. He had his helmet on. He was standing right next to the coaches. He was following the offense down the field as they marched down the field. And he was waving his hands and his arms, exhorting the team to keep up the high pace. He wasn't detached. He wasn't gassed. He wasn't pouting. He was fully into the game and ready to go. But like Curtis said, he was off of the field from the middle of the second quarter till the end of the game. That, no matter whether you want to run the ball or not, that's not functioning. Mm-hmm. That will not work. And especially with a pass protection issues that the Seahawks have on the offensive line, you have to have a threat to run, which means you have to have your lead runner on the field for the defense to at least honor the run.
I feel like we're kind of zigzagging between two topics. One topic is how much do the Seahawks run in relation to how often they pass. And then a separate topic is when you run, who gets the carries?
Sure.
I think
Penny
both
had 10 and Carson had 6. And so as we focus on the subject of who deserves most of the carries, That's where I say, was he trying to get Penny in the game? The facts speak for themselves, and we can say they need to run the ball more. But coming out of week one, it was clear to everybody that Carson looked more capable, and Pete Carroll admitted as such. Okay, so you want to get some rushes to Penny. It seems to me between the two of those, if you were going to have 16 rush attempts, you'd think that maybe Carson would get more like 10, 11, 12 of those. So I don't
know.
Is
this like first-round privilege, or is there an...
Well,
because I've heard you, Hugh, from the outset. Like, I mean, first day of practice, practically, Carson looks like the better running back right now.
I think the plan was they wanted to get Penny some touches in the fourth quarter, but then they didn't give any running backs any touches for a quarter and a half. So if you're not doing that, then at some point, yeah, that's going to skew more towards Penny at the end. But the bigger question is, like, where did the running game go for a quarter and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Quarter and a half, you didn't run the football. It just was like, you know, it goes completely against what they said they wanted to do, and the fact that Carson does look pretty effective when he's out there. So, I mean, there's multiple angles you could look at this thing, and it's puzzling mm-hmm. on a lot of fronts.
They're giving up on it after first down. I looked at the numbers last night. 24 of the Seahawks' 38 runs this year have come on first down. In any situation on first down, first and five after a penalty, two tight ends, three wide receivers, they're averaging no more than 2.1 yards per carry in any situation on first down, which means it's second and eight or worse all the time. And that's when they've given up on the run out. It's the second and eight plays that they just to say, we're passing. And then it's incomplete or a sack, and now it's third and 14. And now you're not running again. So it's the first down runs and not gaining more than 2 yards that has turned Brian Schottenheimer into a passing offensive coordinator. They are, to put another way, they've rushed 24 of their 38 rushes on first down this season. They've rushed the ball only 14 times over their 95 other plays on all downs in all situations. 14 out of 95. Even if you don't want to run, you might accidentally run more than that. So that's the systemic problem, is the mindset of we're giving up on this in this series too early. 14 out of 95. Yeah. I mean, seriously, you could just roll around on the ground and run the ball more than that. Just fall out after the snap. You could drop snaps and still have more rushing totals than that. So to me, it seems a conscious decision after first down that we're just not doing it anymore.
What do you think of the ratio, Hugh? Is that bogging down the offense?
Yeah, absolutely it's bogging down. And particularly for a team that when they've been at their best, there's this term, and I like the term that Pete Carroll used. I think it closes the circle of physicality that we want to have, that it impresses on the entire football team who we are, and the idea that, you know, field position, time of possession, the physicality that affects the defense, helps the defense. And so Carson looks capable to me. I don't think you can just give up just because you have you get stoned a couple times. There is a point in some games where obviously you've got to redress the balance, but they've been in close games, and they just need to keep tapping at that. It helps the play action game. It helps the pass rush. There's a lot of synergy that it helps the defense, time of possession. I mean, there's a lot of synergy involved when you try and run the ball. And so absolutely. Yeah.
The ratio through two games is 28% to 72% run to pass.
Yeah. In close games, not come from behind.
Exactly.
One score game.
Yeah. For the most part, they've been one score games. So it's not like the game's been out of hand and they're trying to rally from behind. Obviously in the fourth quarter, there was some of that this week, but heck, that was when they were running the ball, maybe most effective in the game. Mm-hmm. With some of the carries with Penny late in the season.
No matter what they say, they are Air Coryell without the air and without the Coryell. And without Fouts and without Joyner and without Winslow.
Well, when you add all pieces that say these are running game pieces in the offseason, you would have gone out and got a new right tackle, and you would have gotten a big franchise-type wide receiver, and you would have gone out and got John DeFilippo and not Brian Schottenheimer, then maybe I'm on board. I love that ratio. Put it on. If he's a $30 million quarterback, Hugh, then I don't mind putting the offense on his shoulders, but all of your moves suggested otherwise.
Well, $30 million. Let me ask you this. You guys have been around ball enough to know, if I told you a quarterback went 14 for 27 for a game now. 14 for 27 for 131 yards, one touchdown and one interception with a 62 passer rating, a 51.8% completion percentage, and a 4.8 yard per attempt. By the way, those three statistics for 2017 last year in the NFL, 32 qualifying quarterbacks, all three of those statistics would be dead last. So how would you feel about a game like that?
Not well.
Well, that's what Russell had prior to, as Greg described, a 99-yard garbage time drive where he had 95 of the 99 yards and a touchdown pass. So, so you know, that means not, everybody would be talking if it what? You threw for 131 yards? You had a 62 passer rating? Barely over 50%? That would be like a five-alarm fire right now. What is going on with the passing game? What is going on with Russell? And yet he has, I think, you know, okay numbers coming out of it just because of that last drive.
Right. Well, it's the same thing. We will go back to a year ago where Russell's basically a no-show for a number of reasons in the first half of games. Just like their offense is non-functional in the first half of games, a good chunk of it. He had 34 touchdown passes last year. 26 came in the second half. 19 in the fourth quarter. Because they, the
that can
offense
be a good
just,
thing or a bad thing.
Does not get. I mean, obviously he's had a shown a propensity to be clutch and get stuff done in the fourth quarter, but they just do not get things rolling early at all. I don't remember what the number is off the top of my head, but the number of games in a row, I think it's in the 30s that they haven't scored a touchdown on the opening drive of a game. They just do not get things going.
Well, I suggest earlier this week he doesn't seem to operate too well with structure. As soon as you were down two touchdowns and things loosened up, he was a completely different quarterback. Well, I mean, how much have we got to lay this on?
Well, hang on a second. Hang on a second. We've dissected the interception, the pick six, and how they had shown that seam hitch combination out of empty and what have you. They come back and have a fumble. Russ has a fumble, and Britt gets hurt on that fumble. If you watch that play, it's second and six. The Chicago's already backed off. If you look at their defense, they're in a prevent defense. Now, people say, what's prevent? Do you say, does the defense huddle call up and say, okay, prevent, ready, break, and call the prevent? No, it's a prevent mentality. The corners are backing way off. So Seattle tries on both sides do a hook and go because they'd already been beat by a guy jumping a hitch. Now you take a hitch that's 6 yards, you turn into a hook at 12 yards and go. Well, the corners are off five yards. Russ has got to know, wait, I'm off of that, because he's got an angle right over the middle. Mm-hmm. Guy coming into a window, he's got a completion, he's got great protection, and his eyes are just in the wrong place. And this is where I go back to so often, you watch the tape, Russ at his best gets more out of less than just about any quarterback, but he gets less out of more. There are so many completions out there that top flight $30 million quarterbacks, they read it quickly, they get the ball out of their hand, and they throw off the break, and guys are open enough. Like you watch some of the great games that you see from marksmen like Rodgers and Breeze and what have you. Yeah. When you freeze the tape, you go, where's he going with the ball? There's nowhere to go. And then, boom, and he snaps a laser into somebody, they snap around, and you go, okay. But an announcer could have said, if he'd have taken a sack, they said, well, he's got no place to go. No, the best quarterbacks, they operate in that world. They operate in the yellow all the time.
Maybe the Seahawks know that meaning he's red, green, not and yellow. That guy, and that's why they keep trying to insist that they're going to pound the rock.
Well, then they need to do it.
Well, one thing I was going to ask, did you say Fluker's coming back this week?
Yes.
How big of an impact is he going to be?
That will help.
They brought him in for.
Again, it can't hurt. They've been so bad about running the ball. But yes, that will help to have a road grader at right guard. The one thing he's done in his NFL career is run block. He's not very good in the pass protection, hasn't been, but he can mow the guy in front of him and put him in the ground. And that will help for sure.
All right, well, I do want to get to the Cowboy breakdown in a moment, but I don't think we can escape this segment without taking a couple more questionable shots at the front office decisions this week. Would the two of you mind explaining what happened, you and Curtis, Greg, with the Tom Johnson situation this week?
I can't really explain it. That's the problem. I mean,
I will try.
They cut their starting defensive tackle to add a fourth string safety to the roster who didn't play a single snap in the game. And now there's less importance, I think, on that aspect of it than some of the other areas of it. But, I mean, just take a look at it, a big picture like that. They cut their starting defensive tackle to add a fourth safety, and yes, they had some depth issues on the defensive side of the ball, given some of the injuries. Delano Hill was out and all those sorts of things, but the lineman, I can't remember his name, Jordan or Justin Simmons, was inactive, didn't
Jordan
play.
Simmons. Jordan Simmons. They got him in a trade from Oakland.
Could have waived him and, added Shalom Lawani to the roster that way. Somebody like a Keenan Reynolds could have gone, a Puna Ford could have gone. You're talking a starting lineman. He was their starter and their opener, and they considered him good enough to be their starting defensive tackle to keep him on the roster. And then by cutting a veteran at that point in time, they're responsible for at least a chunk of his salary. I don't know if it's the full weight of it because of the way that the offsets could work in the situation. But bottom line is they paid him over $1 million to play one game. And
now we're going to be paying him to play against them.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's just a lot of aspects that don't seem to make a whole lot
Here's
of sense.
Here's what they were thinking. They're thinking Tom Johnson is a 33-year-old defensive tackle with his salary guaranteed, $1.8 million for this year already. We can release him, and no one was going to sign him because he's 33 years old. If we release Puna Ford, someone will claim him on waivers. If we waive Keenan Reynolds, someone's going to claim him on waivers. Let's release someone who's old and expensive and that no one's going
to
take.
Wouldn't have to go through waivers as a veteran.
Because he's a vested veteran, he doesn't go through waivers, so not every team gets a crack at him. He would just have to be signed off the street. Here's what they didn't count on. Well, here's what they counted on. They counted on, because they did it on Saturday, rosters are already set, so nobody's going to get him for that weekend because rosters have to be set for 24 hours before kickoff for them to play, for that guy to play in a game. So they knew they were okay through the weekend. They counted on Johnson giving him their word, giving them his word that he would sign back with the Seahawks after the game. What they didn't count on was Johnson is 33 years old. This may be the last paydays of his career. Probably will be the last time he plays this season. Why would he not go out and seek another deal from the team he just left, the Minnesota Vikings, who already know him, whose agent has a relationship with the GM, go get paid by the Vikings and still get the guaranteed money by the Seahawks? Now, the offset language is that if basically the Seahawks owe the difference between $1.8 million and the reported up to $1.5 million prorated for the Vikings. Seahawks at least are paying him $300,000 to play against them on December 10th at CenturyLink Field. But not only that, there's a salary cap hit of $2.1 million. So if someone gets hurt and you got to go sign a veteran in the middle of the season and you need cap space of $2 million, where's that cap space? He's playing for the Minnesota Vikings. That's the damning part of this is that the actual cash is actually offset of $300,000. You just gave a piece of whatever remaining, so I think the salary cap space they have left is $14 million. You gave 1/7 of that to a guy you're paying to play against you because you thought he will bide by, okay, I'll just go with what you say. Yeah, I'll take the weekend off and I'll come back for you, play for you next. No, he's 33 years old wanting every last dime he can get before he has to go on with the rest of his life's work. They completely miscalculated that.
And if his, role on the roster was really so marginal as to be released after 1 week, then he shouldn't have made the roster to begin with to where you guarantee the salary from the outset. So, I mean, there's a number of ways you can look at it, and not many of them make sense.
If he's a slightly better player, this leads SportsCenter. But
it's true.
Because it's a fiasco. It's an absolute fiasco. All right, we're going to come back, close out the 12th man roundtable with a preview of the Dallas Cowboys, what we can expect to see from them and how to stop it. Also, we'll get predictions from Greg and Curtis on the other side.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL, Seattle's original diehard sports station, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Last segment, 12-man roundtable. Greg Bell, Curtis Crabtree, Hugh Millen with us here on this Thursday. A lot of talk, of course, throughout the week about the offense looking anemic and a couple of questionable things happening under the Pete John watch. But we haven't talked much about the defense. Hugh, how are we feeling about the Seahawks defense 2 games into the year and getting ready for an opponent like Dallas right now?
I thought the defense looked really good. They weren't flawless, but I thought that they played coverage well. I think Trubisky, you know, his second overall pick, he's trying to find himself, but I think that's an energized franchise with the new coach and with Khalil Mack. So I think that there's a real, you know, a sense of urgency. And so to only allow 17 points, I thought Michael Kendricks, you know, it almost feels like a little bit of a tiny elephant in the room, not a big one, but I guess our baby elephant is that Michael Kendricks is a lot better than Shaquem Griffin at this stage in their careers.
Yeah, that's clear.
And so you know, I mean it remains a great story, but it's just going to be a story that's going to be delayed. You know, but I think that. I think that both corner spots,
even Akeem King.
Yes, I think you always say left tackles and corners. No news is good news, and Akeem King, for the most part, I watched him out there in a lot of one-on-one situations with no help, and I thought he did really well for a guy that's, you know, ostensibly what, the fourth corner, fifth corner.
Go back on to the football camp, team. It was like sixth, seventh. Because of Byron Maxwell, Dante Johnson, too. So, I mean, yeah.
I mean, that could have been the start of your 8:20 hour. You know, what are we doing this? You know, it's just a junk show on the other side of Shaq Griffin, right? And so so I think he deserves mention. And yeah, no, I was very pleased as a Seahawk fan. I was pleased with the defense. That was a winning performance. Absolutely, 100% a winning performance.
Griffin, two interceptions. You know, a lay football fan is a great game by Griffin. All right, sometimes two interceptions, you're in the right place at the right time. Was it a great game by Griffin, Greg?
He had help. Bradley McDougald, I think, has played very well. Curtis was mentioning that off the air, I think. McDougald got the tip to put the ball up in the air in the second interception. The first interception by Griffin was just a good play and a bad throw by Trubisky. He underthrew his receiver down the sideline, and Griffin jumped up and got the ball. Griffin, to me, I noticed it in training camp, he's playing with a lot more swagger. And this is a natural progression of a rookie to a second-year guy, yes. But last year, he was just like, happy to be here, can't believe I'm starting, I'm going to listen to everything Richard Sherman's telling me. This year, he's his own dude. And mm-hmm. and he, I mean, after the interception, he strutted into the camera.
There was some strutting.
He strutted into the Bears bench. He's been woofing at Seahawks receivers throughout training camp. He's a much more self-assured NFL bragging cornerback with an ego and a swag. And I think it's translated into being more aggressive in the ball in the air, too. That he's been a complete positive on a otherwise negative first 2 weeks.
And one of the completions he gave up, a concept that NFL people call Hank, where there's cruel routes, the four underneath people have to squeeze and defend inside out. You saw in both cases, you saw Mingo, Barcavius Mingo, and McDougal flare out way too wide in their zone responsibilities to leave holes open inside. And in that case, Trubisky could have had either one. So there are signs that they're still, that the new pieces are not, you know, as airtight in their assignments and their execution as Seattle was when they were playing cover three at their best.
0-2, a disaster, Curtis. What you expected, everything's all right, opportunity to rebound, where are we at right now?
I'm not shocked by an 0-2 start. When you start with two games on the road, it's a distinct possibility.
Just, I think you predicted them to lose both games.
I thought they'd win in Denver.
No, he said Denver was one of the 10 worst teams. I've been teasing him about that.
Right. Yeah, and I still don't think they're very good.
I'm with you there.
But I don't either. I did pick them to lose in Chicago. It's a situation where they can get back on track from here. I don't think Dallas is very good either. And Arizona is potentially one of the worst teams in the NFL the next 2 weeks. They've got the potential to get things back on the right track. Mm-hmm. It's what makes the fact that you were within potential, you know, one score game potential of flipping one of these two games in your favor. It would make it a frustrating situation. Dallas's offense has struggled through 2 weeks. They've only scored 28 points through two games. Their offensive line is banged up. It's not what it used to be. There's potential for Seattle there to obviously with a home opener to get a win this week against Dallas. There's no doubt about that. So that would obviously help kickstart them pretty good. If it went the other way on them though, then that would be, you know, alarms and sirens and all the above.
Greg, what's key to beating the Cowboys?
Am I allowed to say run the ball?
Sure.
Can I say run the ball?
Say whatever you want.
They need to run the ball. They need to run the ball so DeMarcus Lawrence and the Cowboys defense that's blitzing more this year. Some people think Chris Richard's influence on Rod Marinelli in Dallas is more blitzing. They're blitzing more this year. The Dallas writers from the game in the Giants last weekend said it was the most blitzing they've ever seen Marinelli do. And you think they might blitz a little more than they did last week against Seattle? I would. Mm-hmm. So they're going to blitz. The Seahawks have to pick that up. DeMarcus Lawrence had 14.5 sacks last year. So here comes another. So they got to have a plan for that. Two tight ends, chip blocking, which they did the first 2 weeks to help Ifedi out. They need to run the ball to slow all that down. The best way to attack a blitzing defense is to run at them. And I thought they didn't run enough at Khalil Mack. They didn't run enough at Von Miller. They didn't need to run at DeMarcus Lawrence on Sunday. Here's the thing. You don't want to say a game is must-win in September because it truly isn't. There's 14 left. If they don't win and they don't go down to Arizona and beat a misfunction, just an absolute bad team, let's just put it that way, in Arizona, guess who's coming after that? The Los Angeles Rams. And that could be a race of boats right now between the two teams and the talent levels right now. Then you go to London. Then you have your bye week. They need victories before that all occurs, is what I'm trying to point out. And they finally are at home. This is a game they have to have. Then Arizona, and you have a realistic chance of 2-2, and the season takes a different tenor. Because right now, you have to assume they're going to lose against the Rams, be 2-3. The Rams, by then, may be 5-0. 2-3 and 5-0, and you're already in the math of wild cards and all that stuff. So, and should we bring up the fact that in the four-team division era since 2002, only 11% of playoff teams have started 0-2. 41% of playoff teams have started 1-1. That was what was at stake the other night. 2015, the Seahawks were 0-2 and made the playoffs. Yes, I know that. I hear you all, Seahawks fans. Don't tell me that this team is as talented as the 2015 team. That's all what's at stake on Sunday.
All right, so who wins?
Seahawks win because they run the ball more than 16 times, because Chris Carson gets more than 6 carries. I don't know if the heavens open up and there's revelations on the sidelines, but somebody's actually going to give the ball to Chris Carson. It's going to slow down Dallas's pass rush. Thank you. And like Curtis said, this isn't a totally functioning offense for the Cowboys because of their offensive line issues. Call it like a 20-17. Seahawks get one out.
What do you think, Curtis?
Similar. I think Seattle needs to win this game on just about every front. I think they're capable of it. Obviously, the offensive issues go beyond just the lack of the running game that they had. But they should be able to have enough at home against Dallas to get something on, you know, get a win in the win column. And their defense, you know, go just quick aside back to last week's game. I mean, their defense, given the fact that they were to Akeem King, Michael Kendricks, and Austin Kleacher on their starting lineup, did a more than admirable job to hold Chicago to 17 points. It was the offense that didn't carry its weight.
10 points into the fourth quarter.
And
10-3
so,
game.
You know, ultimately, that's the side of the ball that needs to get things figured out. I agree with Greg that, you know, they probably need to try running the ball a little bit more. I think Seattle wins this one somewhere in the neighborhood of 24-16.
You, I know you don't do the predictions, but you got something else on your chest.
Well, I think it's interesting that Chris Richard, he's seen Russell Wilson in camp and what have you. It'll be interesting to see how Dallas defends Russell Wilson. I think for the Cowboys, they obviously don't have Jason Witten. That's been kind of a security blanket. Dez Bryant, you know, it seems like his legs got old real fast, and so I think they're still trying to find targets there, but you got to contain Dak Prescott. This guy plays with week one, he was playing kind of just with a lot of pressure. And I think all the smack talk leading in the Giant game kind of unleashed him, unbridled him, and he played with a lot of emotion. I think that him getting out of the pocket and being able to, you know, just kind of makes him feel like he's playing a game that he wants to play. So I would really put emphasis on trying to keep him in the pocket and make him find his new favorite targets.
And that's why Bobby Wagner is so decisive. Him back on the field could neutralize that by himself.
Men, great work. Make sure you get your parting gifts. I got you
Rice-A-Roni.
Some packages. Yes, they're right outside the door. Make sure you try the eggnog. before you go home. job well done. Greg Bell, Curtis Crabtree, Hugh Millen, 12-Man Roundtable comes to a close. When we come back, Rick Neuheisel, in case you missed it.